This is Sten from the My Thought Coach podcast. Here you'll find stories and other great stuff all designed to elevate your thinking and set you free in your mind. At the end of every episode is a guided meditation or tool written to go in tandem with the topic of this podcast. Everything on this podcast has, in one way or another, set me or someone close to me free. Hey team, I was actually going to release this episode right about the time that COVID-19 hit. And so it sat on the back burner for a while, but I think it's especially applicable right now because we're starting to deal with ways that we're buffering and all sorts of unhealthy urges are coming up as a way to deal with stress and as ways to put off some of the uncomfortable feelings that are showing up in our lives as we try to navigate the future. So I think this is a great time to release this now. I hope it helps. Today's story is about one of my 11-year-old clients. She's actually my only 11-year-old client. But this little person, about 6 months ago, had an experience in a movie theater. She was with a friend of the family's and had gone to see a movie that she really wanted to see, but it was sudden, kind of last minute. So once the movie was, once they discovered where the movie was and what time it was, they had very little time to get there. So they grabbed their stuff, went to the movie. It was a brand new theater that this little girl had never been in before. They ran to get popcorn and a drink, sat down, and started the movie. After consuming about half of the drink, and I don't know all of the details, but it goes something like this. My little client needed to use the restroom. And since she's 11, she's used the restroom before and told the family friend, hey, I'm going to run to the restroom really quick. She realized that she had been needing to go to the bathroom and use the bathroom before she even got to the movie theater, but had been putting it off. And so as she was exiting to go to the bathroom, she went down because she was unfamiliar with the theater. She went down and went out a door. And as it quietly shut behind her, she realized she was in a little alley and there was no handle on the door that had just shut. And at this point, she had a ton of anxiety because she didn't know what to do. She went out to the other door and realized that she was looking at a parking lot, but it was dark, so she wasn't really even sure where she was. Couldn't even place or figure out that that was leading, that she could take that exit and go out around to the front of the theater and come back in. Just couldn't even see a solution and had to go to the bathroom. And the longer she was in there, the more her anxiety levels rose and the more her urge to go to the bathroom increased as well, because that was just a physiological thing and it was getting pretty intense. She tried to do some deep breathing that she had been taught by her mom. And after just some very anxious, terrifying, oh, and here's the clincher. She has a phone, but she left it up top with the family friend because she was afraid that when she went to the bathroom, she might drop it in the toilet. So she decided to leave it. And so she was there without a phone and she was tapping on the door. Nobody came and panic was setting in. She realized, she took her little fingers after about 5 or 10 minutes and was able to wedge them in between the space of where the door latched and was able to push the latch back and reach down below and open that door. By this time, her bathroom issue was getting even more desperate. She ran up, grabbed her phone, and then very carefully led herself to the outside of the movie theater, was able to find the bathroom, and right as she was getting there, started to wet her pants and raced in and used the bathroom. Went back into the movie theater when she was done and realized that she had left her phone in the bathroom. So then she went back and then finally went stumbling into the movie theater. This is such a sad story, but the reason that I tell you this story is because it set up for this little girl a whole avalanche of symptoms after this, that we were finally able to track back to this one experience in the movie theater. So when she came to me, she was at a place where she couldn't go to bed without getting up 5 or 6, sometimes 7 times a night, sometimes 4 or 5 times, even before she would fall asleep using the bathroom, and it was getting increasingly more invasive in her entire life. She wasn't able to go to sleepovers. She went to one sleepover after this happened and was up in the bathroom so many times that her mom had to go pick her up. She got to the point where she was afraid to get on the bus before school because what if she had to go to the bathroom on the bus? So she would go several times before school. Her whole day became structured around how she could win and how she would go to the bathroom. And by the time she came to me and we were talking a little bit about the situation, I realized that she had that day in her English class, sixth grade English class, had used the bathroom four times during one class. So she had a pretty serious problem. She was devastated, very emotional, and knew she had an issue. And with a little bit of talking, we were able to discover that it kind of all started after this movie situation. So this little girl's brain was doing exactly what it should. And once we put all the pieces together, it was so clear. Her brain was protecting her from future traumatic events like the one that she had experienced in the movie theater. And this experience in the little exit area was so extremely traumatic for her. So stay with me. This is a great time and perfect situation to explore how our brains work. We all have one, and we get in situations like this little girl's a lot more than we may even consciously realize. And those situations set up ripple effects in our lives that really affect us. So if you're stuck in your life, I want you to stick with me because there are clues here for you in this little girl's story. So unless you're living in a plastic ball, actually, especially if you're living inside of a plastic ball, there's just no way to cruise through life, no matter what, without experiences like this. And a lot of our intense emotional experiences kind of begin or start out when we're young. Like this little 11-year-old friend of mine, she had a traumatic, we would label that a traumatic experience. It could have been anything, but for her, it was linked together in her brain with needing to go to the bathroom, this traumatic experience. In fact, in her mind, if she hadn't needed to go to the bathroom at all, this traumatic incident never would have happened in the first place. Her amazing brain, think about this for a minute, her amazing brain took this traumatic situation and realized that if she had not needed to go to the bathroom in that situation, that maybe the episode wouldn't have happened in the first place. And so as a solution, a short cut, if you will, for her brain, which is what our brains are really good on doing, because if you're in the middle of a heated moment, you don't have the time to reason things through. It makes these connections and these links through the neural pathways in the brain. Her brain had connected that if she would just go to the bathroom, that she could avoid future potential stressful events. And so that's what it had done so brilliantly. So anytime there was anything that potentially could bring an anticipation of anxiety, she would need to go to the bathroom. Even if her body didn't need to go to the bathroom, her brain told her that she needed to go to the bathroom. And pretty soon, that going to the bathroom was what her brain thought was the solution of taking care of all of her emotional needs. And anytime she was anxious, that's what would happen. And if the anxiety didn't go away, her brain was like, well, we better go back to the bathroom, even if only 2 minutes had passed since she had gone the last time. So you can see how this became a very crippling situation, but it was also kind of a brilliant solution that her brain had come up with. So any kind of experience like this that has a strong emotional component, really strong feelings, those link, they're like glue. They just put super glue all over any of the situations that were surrounding that little episode of anxiety and come up with solutions on how to avoid something like that ever happening again. So if we look at our ancient brain, of course, that was the most efficient thing to do to help protect us. If we were being chased, we would come up with ways and where to run and little shortcuts so that we didn't have a long thought out planning process before we had to get out of danger. Our brain just made those connections and did what it needed to do to stay out of trouble. Figuring out the trauma is helpful just because it helps you understand how your brain works and that you're not crazy. It's just your brain actually trying to do the very best thing it can for you. So helping my client understand that how amazing her brain was and seeing it clearly for what it was doing and maybe recognizing that it might not always continue being the best thing for her. So here's how we dealt with that situation. And again, I want you to think about your connections and ways that you can incorporate some of these ideas into your own life. The first thing was just to recognize what was happening and to acknowledge how awesome the brain was, but then to recognize that this might not continue to be the very best choice all the time and that it might be interfering. So the goal was that she's allowed to go to the bathroom once if she feels like she needs to, but the second time within half hour, if she feels really strongly that she needs to go, that it's totally okay to go. But first, in order to calm down her amygdala and give her kind of a space, because anytime there's a ritual building up to a potential obsessive thought, it's really important to create a space and to respond differently to the urge, even just a little bit. So any kind of urge, this could be any kind of unhealthy urge that anyone were to have in their life. If instead of responding the same way that they always did to that urge, if they can't just stop, the best thing would be to don't respond to it and hang on during the urge, and eventually the urge would pass. And remembering that anytime you have an urge, you don't have to follow through. And if you can just be comfortable, not comfortable, but if you can get through that urge and try to relax as you pay attention to those sensations in your body of the urge, that after about 10 to 15 minutes, that urge is going to go away. And the most important thing to do during an urge is to not time travel, to not be so anxious that if you don't follow through with the urge, what's going to happen, or remembering the past, what happened before, but to be completely 100% in the moment, not time traveling at all. And not just in the moment in your brain, but actually go to the sensations in your body. Because we can get kind of stuck in our brain going, oh no, I've got this urge, I've got to do it. And that's all in your brain and not even paying attention to what's happening inside of you during that urge. And that's a powerful place to be. So ideally, she would be able to pay attention to her body and say, okay, I have this urge. I probably don't need to go. I'm going to see if I can get through this urge. After about 15 or 20 minutes, that urge would subside. And the next time it came back, it would be less strong until eventually her brain would have a re-association with that connection and recognize, this isn't going to be the answer that I thought it would be. And let go of that affiliation or that connection that the brain had. So for her, that was too much. So we decided to do some breathing, because even just breathing slowly, that she could absolutely go to the bathroom, but first she had to do 7 breaths, or she could choose to do 7 breaths. So we actually drew a triangle and had her put her finger on the corner of the triangle. And as she moved her way around the triangle, any direction, doesn't really matter which direction, but for her it was clockwise. She started at one corner and went around to the next point. And as her finger moved from one point to the other, she would take a breath. And then as her finger moved to the second point, she would hold that breath. And then as her finger returned to the very first original point where she first started, she would breathe out. And as she went through that triangle 7 times, at the end of that, then ask herself if she could maybe wait a little longer before acting on that urge. So just interrupting the urge and doing something slightly different, especially if it could be something that would tell your amygdala that everything's going to be okay, and breathing slowly and deeply and fully and holding in between your breaths, holding your breath for a moment in between, is one of the best things you can do to help your amygdala know that all is well. Another thing you could do is even just imagine biting into a lemon, because the production of saliva actually makes your amygdala think, well, if I can eat, then things might not be so serious. And so at the end of each of those little hesitations, just ask yourself, all right, do I need to go now? And if you do, that's completely fine because you've created already a new little pattern or system in dealing with that and just causing a delay. If you want, one of the last things that I taught her and that you could do is this tapping. And so I'm going to attach a link to EFT, but tapping is a really good one too, to kind of interrupt any kind of thought associations, especially with strong emotions in the middle of them. It works great with panic or anxiety. But it just essentially is tapping through a few pressure points on your body while you're in the middle of the feeling of the strong urge. So knowing that if you're in the middle of a strong urge, it's so awesome because it's the exact place that you would want to be to start tapping and seeing if you can lessen that grip of those thoughts with that urge. So I'll link to that as well. When it comes to obsessive thinking or thoughts, so many people get really stuck, in particular with food. And so that's going to be the focus of this episode and kind of seeing the associations that we've made using this example of this cute little 11-year-old client was just to help you understand how those connections get made. But I want to expand that and talk about food. And this whole month, the next, we'll be doing a series of 4 episodes about body and food and what you can do to kind of change all of those, to kind of become a better thought coach to yourself during all of those relationships that you have with food. So, long loop around, I want you to think about you. And in particular with food, this just transitions so beautifully. Because when we're young, I want you to think about now the associations that you've made, probably all of us have made with food. We celebrated with treats in my family. So if anyone did something great, or we finished a recital, or someone had some sort of, any kind of celebration always included treats. Good things included treats. You know what else included treats? When we went and got shots at the doctor's office. So first of all, as a very young person, most of us made associations with food, yummy treats. Maybe it's chocolate. Maybe it's a specific kind of treat. Maybe it's just treats in general. But that's how we celebrate. That's how we be together. That's how we honor someone that's done something good. Then we also get rewarded. I remember when we'd go to the dentist, we'd get a treat after. When we go to the doctor, we'd get a treat after. When we were sad, when we had a bad day, when we got in a fight with somebody, we'd always go and get a treat. I also remember going to a movie and always wanting to get popcorn. And the food industry is set up really well to help re-stir up these associations, right? You can't go to a movie theater without all of those. It's the smells. It's the sound of the popcorn. It's the whole, the people in front of you. Like, all of those sensations are all designed to link us back into old time and old situations. And so I want you to think about your personal relationships with food. What are the treats that have become a part of your coping and pleasure and comfort or associations? What are the foods that have become a part of the rituals and the celebrations and the comforts of life? And again, remember that story of this little 11-year-old girl who had this association, that place in her brain. And then I want you to think about the place in your brain where, oh, I'm uncomfortable, food's the answer. Just like her, oh, you're anxious, go to the bathroom, that's the answer. For so many people today, it's, are you sad? Food is a solution, or a special treat is a solution. Are you celebrating? Are you with people? Are you wanting to go and connect with someone? Bring food. Are you lonely? Are you bored? Are you feeling feelings that are uncomfortable that you don't want to feel? Perfect. Go and eat something to avoid discomfort. The craziest part of all of this is that having an urge for food is just, it's just a sensation. It's an urge. That's it. So if we have a thought around food and we want to go get it, there's a strong connection, and not going and getting that food is uncomfortable. But the truth is, you can deal with being uncomfortable. We all can. You do it all the time. And our ability to be uncomfortable for periods of time is really the key to most people's success, is that they're able to create situations where they push themselves slightly into uncomfortable territory so that they can have what they want most. On the other end of that discomfort is almost all the time growth, or the obtaining of goals, or changing your life to make it better match what it is you want most. But when we're always having dramas around food, or around our bodies, or around our perception of what other people may think of our bodies, or around a relationship with how clothes feel or a number on a scale, we are so successfully, the brain is just trying to protect us from having discomfort, and it has associated that food is the solution. So for you, if this is sounding familiar, I want you to imagine that you too have created in your brain kind of like a neural connection, not like, you have. You've created a neural connection with all sorts of solutions for the feeling of any kind of discomfort. And if food is something that soothes that, you have put a line in your brain, like a groove on a record or a line in the sand, where all of those solutions are going to go. And what you want to do is soften that connection. You want to soften that groove so that there are other options of what you can do when you're feeling an uncomfortable feeling, or when you want to connect with someone, or when you want to celebrate. You want to have other options besides food so that your life isn't about food, because you're worthy regardless, right? If you feel like you need to look a certain way in order to be lovable or acceptable or of value or worth anything, then it's a lie. It's your brain tricking you into thinking that having a different situation than the one you currently have is the answer or the key to happiness, and it never is. If our amygdala or our brain has associated any highly comforting feelings or highly anxious feelings or any strong emotional attachments to food, we're going to start to notice, if you haven't already, that you're having issues around food or around your body. And so, a few quick things that you can do if that's the case. One is go through and deal with the urges. Because again, just like sweet little 11-year-old, you want to begin to not respond to the urge in the same way that you used to. And once you can change your response, even slightly at the beginning, it will be easier to change it even more the next time. And the urge will be not as strong the next time. As promised, here is a guided meditation that will help you the next time you have any kind of unhealthy urge. Doesn't matter what it is. It will help you work through that until you learn how to do that on your own. Begin first by finding your breath, because that will help immediately. To do this, put your body into an alert posture with your spine more or less straight and your shoulders gently pressed down. If they're hunched up by the ears from tension or stress, gently press them down and lift your chest slightly. Relax your face and then bring your attention to your breathing, either at the tip of your nose or in your belly. Try to follow the breath for a complete cycle from the very beginning of the inhale to the point of complete fullness, and then back down to the point of relative emptiness as another breathing cycle begins. See if while you do this, you can allow whatever craving or desire you have to be a little bit in the background at first, as you bring your attention to your breath as it goes through this cycle feeling the sensation starting at your nose and then moving to your belly, inhaling to fullness, and then breathing it out to almost emptiness each time. If you notice your mind heading off during this process into some kind of chain of thought, just gently bring it back to the sensations in the belly or the tip of the nose as you continue to breathe. Even if a craving or an urge starts to rise and feel more intense or loud, see if you can still allow it for now to be in the background. Your mind can only focus really on one thing at a time. So bring your attention, instead of to the urge, to your breath, over and over for now, letting each new breath, kind of like its own wave, bring you back again and again from any floating thoughts that may arise. Thoughts will come, but once they do, just notice them and go back to focusing on your breath. Now begin to allow the breath to be more in the background and bring your attention to the urge or craving that you might be feeling, to anything that you're desiring. In this exercise, your breath now will be like your surfboard, allowing you to ride the wave of that craving without being wiped out, without having to fulfill the urge. Start by beginning to visualize the craving as if it were a wave in the ocean. Notice how it begins as a small swell. It's a wavelet almost. And then it slowly builds and builds into a crest. And just use your breath to ride that wave of the craving within you. As long as you stay with the breath, you won't be overwhelmed. Allow each wave of that urge to rise as high as it wants, and then ride each one all the way through until it peters out near the shore. It will take focus to be able to do this. So as you stay focused on your breath, you'll begin to notice how that urge or craving begins to shift over time, how it begins to change and maybe move from different places in your body. Feel exactly how the craving manifests inside of your body now. As you ride that wave with your breath, feel the texture of it, the form of the wave, the detail in each wave of craving. Each craving that comes may be slightly different. What does the one you're on right now feel like? Become a fascinated observer as you stay with your breath as if it were a surfboard, using it to ride each wave of craving. You can experiment with how much of your attention to place on the breath sensations, and how much you place on the sensations of the craving or the urge as you surf it. Whatever way you choose, notice how the urges arise and then how they reach something of a crescendo of intensity, of breadth, and then eventually subside for a bit before rising again into a whole new wave. It may take a while for the next wave to come, or not, Use your breath and your awareness to be there whenever it does. You can continue the practice of urge surfing as long as you need to. So you can pause now. If you'd like to bring it to a close for this moment, and you can come back whenever you want, simply bring your attention back to the breath and allow those urges or cravings to gradually become more part of the background noise again. They can still be there, continuing to rise and swell and grow and then break. And that will continue even if your full attention isn't on them in this moment. Instead, you can move more and more of your focus towards the rising and falling sensations of your breath again, and become more and more focused on that sensation. So moving back to the inhale sensation at the tip of your nose, the coolness of every breath as it enters, and then following the breath all the way through its full, complete cycle, rising to fullness and then releasing. Releasing each breath to a sense of near emptiness. Back at the tip of the nose and following it through to the end. Whenever you're ready, you can bring this practice to a close and bring your attention back into the wider world. Or you can go back to surfing the urge, using your breath. Or you can switch between the two as long as you need to. Anytime a new thought or idea or memory pops into your brain, acknowledge it and go back to surfing your breath or surfing the urge as long as you need to.